Hi, everybody. This is Bob Bergen. You're listening to a couple of dads on a podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome to Two Dads and a Podcast.
Can I talk now?
Nope. I'm doing the entire podcast myself.
So, you know, the bad thing about having a bathroom right on the other side of the wall? When you take a dump, that smell just lingers. Hello, everybody. You're listening to Two Dads and a Podcast, where we just kind of randomly...
I did that intro.
What?
I told everybody.
We just... Don't ruin my role. We just kind of... We're a couple of guys who meet up randomly every week at
randomly.
The same exact time.
On
with
a schedule.
These random subjects that we like to talk about. I'm on cloud nine still. We'll get to
why we're super hyped right now. We're both a little giddy today.
This week we're going to our top five studio.
I challenged you with our top five Studio Ghibli films.
Yep. This one is hard but easy, but hard but kind of easy.
You know what's going to be up there, but what order is it in?
Right.
That's the hardest part.
Fair enough.
The order itself. So go ahead with your number five.
Number five. As you know, I've told you the story before.
Yes.
I went to a con where I met Jason Marsden, right? So at this con, my wife was in charge of money, which means she paid out the guests of honor, and one of them being Jason Marsden. And in meeting him, my son was about 3 years old at the time, and he walked Jason around the dealer's room for a solid half hour to an hour. And then I think the next morning, we're at breakfast, and in pops in Jason. He sits down next to us, has a conversation with my son, with me, and my wife. Now they're besties.
Oh, of course.
Through the weekend, we had these. We were able to get to know him on a more personal level. And so the last sort of day, he did autographs, obviously, for money, as most actors do at these conventions.
Money.
Yep. But we were like, you know, we handed the CD, the DVD to our son. We were like, hey, go get this signed for us, man. So it was a family DVD, right? It was Spirited Away. He played
Kohaku. No, it wasn't
Kohaku.
You gave it to your son.
No. He played Kohaku. Go get a sign for the family. And it comes back and it says, to Rowan.
Look, you gave it to him and said, go get it signed. This is entirely your fault.
Now we have to buy a new DVD. So long story short, Bob Bergen last week, Jason Marsden, hopefully in the near future, Spirited Away is one of my favorite, is about a child prostitution. So it's a lighthearted film. And
yeah,
I don't know. It is his most critically acclaimed film. I don't think it's his best. That's why it's a number five on my list. But it is a great film.
Absolutely.
It's a joy from beginning to end. This little girl is trying to make her way in this world that she knows nothing about just to get back to her parents.
Yep.
It's a really touching story, and it's so well written. This is the same way with all Studio Ghibli movies, and specifically Miyazaki movies. The art style, the music, this fantasyful life.
Oh, man. The music, and especially. Joe Hisaishi is a
great
musical genius.
And from movie to movie, it's
you know, we actually talked about, I know one of our previous episodes, top soundtracks and top music, and Joe Hisaishi.
He was multiples.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the biggest thing you notice about all Miyazaki movies are the incredible detail, down to like the food looks so delicious.
God. Why does anime food always look so fucking good?
Because they're not kidding themselves, okay? They know what everybody wants, and it's delicious food.
That's right.
What is your number five, sir?
So my number five, actually, I watched it for the first time last night.
Yeah.
And it instantly stood out. I had to put it on my list, and it's one that I've wanted to watch for a long time, and it's one of Studio Ghibli's most acclaimed, outside of Spirited Away, one of their most acclaimed films, yeah. And it's The Tale of Princess Kaguya.
Oh, fantastic. Oh,
my goodness.
Seriously. You stunning. Just now watched this?
It's literally just now. Oh, I've wanted to watch it for years, and we never bought it, never saw it on the shelves, yeah. And it is absolutely stunning in every way. The art
That's
style,
a beautiful
it's
film.
Watercolor it really animation, and yeah. It's so different than what we're used to from Miyazaki style films. And it was just absolutely gorgeous. The storytelling is phenomenal. They did a wonderful job at getting you to relate
Definitely.
And love every single character in this movie. And each one, you know, there's, you know, your antagonist to an extent with Kaguya's father. But even then, you relate so well to them. It's fantastic. It's an emotional ride that, you know, it had me laughing. It had me tearing up. I wanted more of this style yeah. of both art, music, and storytelling that I really hope that at some point in the future, you know, maybe in 20 years when Hayao Miyazaki actually retires and somebody else can take up the mantle.
For the 20th time.
Yeah. That we get another movie this well done.
Fortunately, there's been so many, like, I don't want to call them imitation movies, but movies that were inspired by this specific movie.
Oh, yeah.
That you can go out and find really good storytelling like this.
Oh, absolutely.
And this movie itself.
Ghibli, you can't top Ghibli when it comes yeah. to animated features. You just can't. Their storytelling, the directors, and this one was directed by Isao Takahata, who unfortunately did pass away in 2018. So we're not going to get any more from him. And he did the big movies that did really well outside of Miyazaki. He did Grave of the Fireflies. He did My Neighbor Yamada's and Tale of Princess Kaguya. So he did, every single one of those was critically acclaimed.
Yeah, for sure.
And they weren't Miyazaki. And, you know, everybody thinks Ghibli is Miyazaki, but they do some fantastic stuff that's not him. But let's get on to your number four.
So my number four, if you don't know about us, like this is a topic that we are both extremely knowledgeable on. And this starts for me, this is a love obsession going decades old. So I guess it starts out when growing up, when you came home from school at our age, you watched Tsunami, right?
Oh, yeah.
You watched, you know, Dragon Ball Z, Zoids, Yu Yu Hakusho.
Oh, yeah.
You saw all these great, vivacious anime. And a lot of them
high action packed as well.
Yeah. My dad, he knew that I was into anime from this. And so he read in the Columbus Dispatch about Cartoon Network picking up the rights to air Miyazaki's movies. And he just sort of casually told me, like, hey, you should check this out. They're playing them all weekend long. Watch these movies. And I was never really into these feature-length anime movies. They seemed, I just got this feeling that they would be boring. They wouldn't hold my interest. They weren't
not like
action-packed.
A series, you know?
You know, they weren't the sort of Tenchi Muyos or Cowboy Bebops that I was used to seeing. You know, how could they hold my attention? And the first movie I watched was Castle in the Sky.
Oh, yes.
And also, loving the Star Wars films and the Batman animated series, you know, the main antagonist in the movie was voiced by, you guys would know him as Luke Skywalker. That was Mark Hamill.
Yes.
And it was... Yes. It was very much, you could tell, it was his first iteration of the Joker voice. It had that same characteristic.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie started to finish. I think, was that was the one with Jason Vanderbeek was the main character in it. And it was just...
I think so, yeah.
It was just these beautiful ships. Like, they seemed so antiquated. Like, they flapped with these big flapping wings. and it was all steam powered.
It was a very different take on the steampunk versus what we're used to seeing with all the gears and all the, you know, heavy machinery. It was much more fluid. Much more
affluent. What? No, but it was
much more fluid and smooth than what we were used to.
Yeah, it was this crazy art style. What the fuck is this shit? So what is your number four?
My number four is When Marnie Was There. This one was Hiromasa Yonebayashi was the director. And I don't know. I've gone back and rewatched this one multiple times. And I think just it's so relatable. And that's one of the things that I like about Studio Ghibli as a whole. You know, Miyazaki, of course, has his relatable stuff, but every Ghibli film has relatable characters. And this one, it's a wonderful slice of life feature. It follows a young girl. You know, she's yearning for a real family. She's grown up in foster care her whole life, and she's having some health problems. She ends up going to go stay in a small town and ends up learning the truth about what happened to her family and what's going on. And it was kind of a story of personal growth and personal acceptance and accepting who family really is.
And it was such a unique way to tell the story, the way they went about it.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And the whole time you kind of there's that hint of, is this real? Is this, you know, a fantasy kind of thing?
It almost felt like flashbacky, sort of like having just these visions, but it was very fresh take on a simple, often used style.
Mm-hmm. It's a frequent trope that you see in a lot of slice of life kind of things of, you know, a orphan almost wanting a family and, you know, by the end learning who their family really is. And it's been the people around me all along, but it was so well told. And of course, this one did have the traditional Studio Ghibli art style, the music, and it was just a beautiful story that both captivates you visually, but emotionally you're invested into it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And so that's why this one had to be on my top five list. So your
number three is still unbelievably relevant today. And that would be Nausicaä of the Valley of the Wind.
Nausicaä of the Valley of the Wind. That was a fantastic movie.
One of Miyazaki's first. Technically, it wasn't done by Studio Ghibli. As we've discussed, it was adopted into the archives, obviously.
They acquired the license and the rights to it, which is why it's on the list.
It would have been Studio Ghibli if Miyazaki had created Studio Ghibli a few years prior.
It was literally made, 2 years before Ghibli became a thing.
Yeah. And it is just this beautiful display of how humans could destroy nature, but still find, it's an angry film. It is really an angry film.
It really is.
But it has this underlying heartbeat, pulse of hope, of it's not all lost. We can still survive. We can still overcome and
create, do better and learn.
Create a world worth living in. And the artwork was unbelievable. The giant just open desolated landscapes. These giant shells of huge insects. This fantastic flying equipment. And it's just crazy. The artwork that went into this, I think it was Hisashi's first film with Miyazaki. So you get that introduction to this often hauntingly just
beautiful music and audio. Yeah. It really is. The whole movie has a tension to it. And it's necessary for the story that they're telling.
You should feel uncomfortable when you've desolated your own habitat to such extent.
Absolutely.
That's something you should see and you should feel uncomfortable personally, because it needs to move you in a way to help change your attitude towards the environment that you live in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So my number three
Yeah.
We have already discussed Spirited Away.
Yeah.
Spirited Away. It had to be. My top three was easy. My four and five was more difficult to figure out what I wanted. But Spirited Away, you know, we talked about it a little bit. It's an incredible fantasy journey of this little girl through a busy spirit bathhouse. And the whole story is about...
Whorehouse, you mean?
Bathhouse. Yep. Yeah. Bath. Right. Yeah. They take
That's
baths.
That's what I said.
Mm-hmm.
They do.
And
big, fat, disgusting slob of creatures. Just go in there and scrub-a-dub-dub.
Scrub-a-dub-dub. But, you know, the story, Miyazaki has such a way of getting his lessons and the morals of the stories told without you even realizing he's telling them to you.
For sure.
It's so gorgeously drawn, gorgeously directed, you know, and at the end, the girl, she grows as a person and she comes to understand more about both herself and the world around her, having journeyed through all these different trials and challenges. And
it's another topic that I don't think many people would think it should still be relevant, but oh my fucking God, it is.
Absolutely. Well,
and it is still a problem today in the world, and that's crazy. But it's, like you said, it's more than just a story of a underage prostitute sold into sex slavery. It is.
That is not what it's about at all.
It is 100%. Don't even. No. Her and Kohaku River's relationship being just bigger than just some like romantic sort of thing. It's a spiritual, it's a deep down connection you have with something or somebody deep in your past that just pulls you back. Like you don't even remember who are to an extent.
That's how we came back together.
Back.
Hmm? That's how we came back together.
Prostitution? Is that... You found me on Main Street?
I don't know why you saying that it's about underage prostitution bothers me so much. But it does. It does. Because maybe it's because I like the movie so much that... You're wrong.
Keep your innocence, man. Keep your innocence. No, it is a fucking phenomenal tale. Such a strong story. Strong basis. The evil witch and the twin sister good witch. The Kohaku, is he good? Is he bad? Is he using her as his pawn? Or does he actually care about her? There's so much to invest you into this movie.
Absolutely. And it is the first and only hand-drawn, non-English animated feature film to win the Academy Award for Best Animated Feature. And that in and of itself is incredible. Because
it's incredible, but also just wrong.
Yeah, there should be more. There should be more. I agree. A lot. But this one definitely deserved it. It was visually incredible. The music, the storytelling. There's a reason it's on both of our top fives.
Yeah. So number two for me is Howl's Moving Castle.
Same.
It is. For me, it came out on a time where we were both grown enough to be going to theaters and stuff. And It was the immediate follow-up to Spirited Away. It was almost this emotional successor, even though it didn't get as much acclaim. I think it was one of his best done. No, I'll take that back. It is his best done movie. Just start to finish. The soundtrack, the visuals, just such a sweet love story altogether. The acting from Billy Crystal to Christian Bale, Gene.
We kind of got to witness Christian Bale's Batman, you know, what, years before Batman?
This was so much better. Because his soir de vivre, he was so charming in the movie.
Oh, I'm just talking about when he turns into that monster and he's in the cave and he's like, go away. But no, it was a visual You know, we've said this about every single thing, movie so far, but it was a visual and musical masterpiece.
Yeah.
You know, it was a wonderful, magical tale and romp through an incredible world with a wonderful story that kind of touched on overcoming personal demons. And again, loving not only others, but loving yourself. And there's this constant theme in a lot of these movies that Ghibli and Miyazaki especially does. But each one is told in such a unique way that you have to watch all of them. I can't remember if it was the first one that Tired Mom and I watched together, but I know when I was trying to get her into anime, I used Studio Ghibli and I used Miyazaki especially as a gateway, as a roadway.
What is the first Miyazaki you and I ever saw together? Because I don't even remember at this point.
Oh, dude, I don't know.
So anyways, number one, Princess Mononoke.
I had a feeling. I had a feeling.
For me, I relate to that on such a deep personal level. It is by far his angriest movie.
Oh, jeez. Dude, it's bloody, it's gory for a children's movie.
And, you know, the casting from Billy Bob Thornton to Billy Kudrip. I mean, the casting, Jada Pinkett is just so fucking solid. And it speaks so hard on conservationism and preserving an environment and respecting just the world that you encompass. And God, it was dark, angry, gritty.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a movie that I put on constantly just to fall asleep to, just because it's a comforting sound for me. It is the second Miyazaki movie I ever watched.
And it's such a good one. It really is.
There's nothing like it to me.
I will say the forest spirit thing with the human face and the deer, but the first time I ever saw that, it confused the shit out of me and I was mildly scared. And I feel like
just dripping, just oozing this hatred out of himself.
Yes.
Once his head is lopped off and stolen.
It's another of Miyazaki's films that has a tension the entire time.
Just you watch this pig spirit at the beginning getting hunted down because he's on a rage towards this village that didn't vilify him, this village that didn't provoke him, but he had just lost any semblance of
control.
I mean, you could call it humanity.
Yeah.
But soul that he had because of the hatred that was imbued onto him. And it's just a hate begets hate, strong message.
Yes. Yes. So my number one is Porco Rosso.
Really?
Yes. This movie.
Is it because you're chubby?
It's because I'm a fat pig, yes.
No, I thought you were going to go with Ponyo because your son's favorite.
Ponyo is my son's favorite. And that one was so hard not to put on the list.
Right.
Because Ponyo is a gorgeous film and it's wonderfully told. But
it
is.
So stoned out of my mind the first time I watched Ponyo.
There's something about Porco Rosso that I don't know. It's just my favorite of Miyazaki's films.
I love that you chose that one because it's a great movie.
It was originally supposed to only be like a 30 to 45 minute film for airplane rides.
Yeah.
And it ended up turning into this full feature length film. And at the time they were working on, what was it, Only Yesterday, which was not a Miyazaki film. And they were working on that as the main portion, and Miyazaki was doing this project.
Yeah.
And they didn't have enough staff for it. So they ended up getting more women production and crew members to do it. So this is a film that was, it was targeted towards older men, but it was mainly done by younger women. And I absolutely love that. And it kind of touches on that in the movie where Porco's crew to build his new plane is pretty much all women. And that was kind of a homage to the production crew. But the story, it's so well done. You have this serious element of war and a legitimate conflict happening in the world, while also being very silly and lighthearted at times, with some wonderful, you know, subtle humor, some that's not as subtle, that's just in your face. And it really captured both a younger and an older audience. And this film is kind of what cemented Studio Ghibli as a real contender in anime feature films.
Yeah, it's definitely a very important one in the saga of Ghibli.
And, you know, we talk about the voice actors a little bit. You know, Michael Keaton was Porco.
Who's that?
I don't know. It's just some guy. I think he did.
Oh, yeah. The Other Guys. He keeps quoting TLC in The Other Guys. Don't go chasing waterfalls. Yeah, I know who you're talking about now.
But, you know, they had such a fantastic. Well, honestly, the casting for every one of these films and every one that we haven't mentioned yet is fantastic, both for the dub. If you watch the original Japanese audio, the casting is so flawless. And that's one thing in every single one of Studio Ghibli's films, is the people truly bring these characters to life.
There's not a single Ghibli film that has been done by people who aren't the utmost passionate about these films. And yeah, it's just brilliant. So
some of the ones we hadn't mentioned.
Run down.
Yeah.
Some.
My Neighbor Totoro.
My Neighbor Totoro, the original dubbing is my favorite, but the fanning dubbing is also solid. I'll just say that about it, but it's a fantastic film.
I don't know that I've seen the original.
The representation of Ghibli itself is Totoro.
Yes, that is their logo. That is who you see every time you play a movie.
And we saw it in theaters with the kids recently when they started redoing all of them. We tried to catch as many as we could, and it's brilliant. Grave of the Fireflies is such a depressing war movie that my wife refuses to watch it ever again.
No happy ending.
Brilliantly done.
No happy ending.
Let's go. Kiki's Delivery Service is such a fun, fantasyful movie.
It is. It is. And it's so silly. It's so lighthearted. There's not really an antagonist in the movie. Yeah. And you think, okay, well, where's the conflict? And it truly is just this girl trying to figure out where she belongs, and that is the conflict. And it's so hard for a feature-length film to have no antagonist.
My favorite part about it is like when the dirigible is burning and falling, and she comes in to save, and you feel like, oh, well, this is some sort of climax, but no, it's just another event in her life. It's just another step in her life. Absolutely. And it feels so unresolved, but at the same time, you feel satisfied at the end. And that's another strong cast with Kirsten Dunst and others.
Oh, yeah. Whisper of the Heart. Is another good one.
The Wind Rises.
Okay, so we're just not going to talk about mine at all. The one that I mentioned.
No. No, we got to fly by. No, Whisper of the Heart's good, but the Wind Rises, shockingly good. I didn't expect it to
Wind
be
Rises
as good as
it was really beautiful. And it's another Joseph one that Gordon doesn't Levitt. Necessarily have a true happy ending necessarily. But
more often doesn't.
Yeah. And it's a more serious film, but again, every single one of these, you relate to the characters so well.
Right. But and I do have The Wind Rises. I've Only Yesterday. It went so long without being dubbed, and it was so nice to finally have an English dub version of it, and they had such a great cast for that.
Yeah, what was
also
that? Like, the dub wasn't... the movie itself came out in, like, early 90s, 1991?
89.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Because I've got it pulled up, and it says 1991.
Well, your mom.
But the dub didn't come out until 2016.
I know, that's crazy.
That's nuts.
The Secret of Arrietty.
Secret World of Arrietty.
Obviously, it's not a, they didn't reinvent the wheel. It was The Borrowers.
It was The Borrowers.
And we had The Borrowers.
It was so much better than The Borrowers.
The soundtrack to that is one of my favorites of all time. It's just this cool, like, sort of Celtic music. And it was very well done. I just, that was the one that I wanted to have be my number five, you know, but I just couldn't bring myself to eliminate any of the others.
Yeah, it was a tough one. I am going to go back to Whisper of a Heart only because Whisper of the Heart is the only Ghibli film that has so far had either a spinoff or a sequel. And I don't, you've seen Whisper of the Heart?
The Whisperer.
Yes. What?
Yeah,
so, I've seen Whisper of the Heart, you know.
I've seen Whisper of the Heart.
Wonderful slice of life. This girl wants to write this fantasy book, but she has, you know, she's struggling with going to school because there's a very different feel of school and academics in Japan. And sometimes kids just won't go to high school. They just go straight into the workforce. It's very different. But Whisper of the Heart kind of plays on that a little bit. And this girl wants to be a famous writer. And she writes this little story about, you know, this cat named, you know, Baron. And later on, years later down the road, 7 years later, they came out with The Cat Returns.
The Cat Returns.
Yes. And this one, you know, there's no confirmation on it, but it's kind of a spinoff and it makes you feel like this is her story that she wrote in Whisper of a Heart.
You have now spent more time on this topic than you did any of your other top fives.
I have not. That is a lie. That is blasphemy. You are a scoundrel liar.
I like The Cat Returns better than Whisper of the Heart.
I do too. It's a more fantasy element.
Crazy enough.
So I like that one better, but Whisper of the Heart is what sets you up for that one. So now I have to ask, what's news with you?
Me?
With what? You?
Me? Oh my gosh. I never thought anybody would ask me this my entire life.
We ask each other so, every week.
Besides that part. Tom and Jerry. They're doing a Tom and Jerry with live people. Like live still cartoon Tom and Jerry's.
Action, yeah.
I don't know why. I can't figure it out. I like Tom and Jerry as a kid. You know, it was fun. The movie they did was pretty cool. But I just don't see the demand for it.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I like Tom and Jerry. And I love especially the classic ones where there's no talking. There's no vocals in any way. It's just hijinks set to music with fun sound effects. And
I'm just not seeing it here, though.
You know, the little bit that I saw, the trailer that I saw, it was silly, you know. Jerry and Tom are walking across the street and Jerry stops, turns around, and Tom's all happy and he gets hit by a bus. I mean, that's pretty classic.
Here's the thing. Yeah,
but they could have animated that and it would have gotten the same thing across.
Have people in a room and release like a feral cat and a disease-ridden mouse on them. That would be a show I would watch.
That's the fan film coming out.
And luckily we are getting I can't say we're getting, it's being considered to revive the Venture Brothers, Venture on HBO Max. Another reason to consider switching to HBO Max.
Yes. Dude, on Venture top of Bros all the others.
So here's another thing that I didn't plan to bring up, but I did read today, like even like Conan O'Brien is ending his show. He's ending his Monday through Thursday half hour show to switch to a weekly show on HBO Max come June 2021.
Dude, HBO Max is getting all the good stuff, man. All these Ghibli films we just talked about. HBO Max. Unless you're international, at which point, screw you guys and your special Netflix.
So what's news with you, sir?
So I actually have quite a few this week. A little heavier news.
Okay, so that's all we have time for the news. Let's move on to our final. Sorry.
So Star Wars did a holiday special years ago.
Yeah.
If you haven't watched it, that's fine. You don't need to. It was bad. And that's all you need to know.
And now they've done
a Lego Star Wars holiday special. Yeah. And I love that it's almost self-aware humor with it. And in Lego style, this one is new. So it actually takes place after Rise of Skywalker. And so it has all the new characters and it's very, I haven't actually watched it, but I've read up on it. But I love the tongue-in-cheek and the self-aware humor of the Lego stuff. So I can only imagine that this one kind of takes the old holiday special and it's literally like there to make fun of it.
This is the most unnecessary thing that's ever been made in the history of nerd.
It really is, but I love it. I love it.
The only thing that I am shocked about with this is that they didn't turn it into a video game and charge $35 for it.
That's probably DLC for the new Skywalker saga, because there's a Star Wars Lego game coming out nine movies.
What else you got for me?
So smaller stuff coming on. Oh, we'll kind of boost through this. So Super Mario 3D All-Stars added true GameCube controller support. So now you can actually play the game the way it was originally intended to be played. And that is fantastic. Now I just have to find a GameCube adapter for my Switch. Among Us, which we all know just kind of blew up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, mobile, PC. It's just a crazy, silly, fun game. I've played it a few times.
Is that the thing with all the memes I keep seeing?
Yes, yes.
I have no idea what it is.
It's a pretty fun game. It's free on mobile. We should play sometime. But they are getting a new map, finally. So they had two maps before. They are getting a brand new map, and it looks like it's taking place on a bigger spaceship. It's Henry Stickmin themed, which I don't know what Henry Stickmin is, but that's the theme of this one. So that one's kind of fun.
I can't.
Pokemon Go is getting a massive update. They are still updating this thing. How many people are still actually...
fix the game?
No. But for the 12 people who are still playing this game, you can now level up to level 50.
Look, you know what? Here's the thing about Pokemon Go. I'm just going to go. I switched to working as a weekend warrior, which means I cannot participate in any of the Saturday events. And they don't do any through the week for people who work weekends only. Second thing about the game.
Fact.
For the first week, all I heard, or the first month, we'll say, all I ever heard was, well, it's a free game. Why are you complaining about the crashing? I'm complaining because they're making $10 million fucking dollars a day. And if you can't upgrade your shit with $10 million a day, get the fuck out of the business.
The game is much more stable. They've had a lot more updates, but this...
I know it's more stable, but the upgrades...
So this is a pretty massive one. They're upping the level cap.
It took them 4 fucking years.
I mean...
Look,
you make a better game and we'll talk and we'll discuss, okay?
Give me $10 million a day, I will make a fantastic fucking game, okay? I guarantee, goddamn tee it.
So, but the level cap is raised from 40 to 50, and they are including, not all, but a lot of various, a lot of the Pokemon from Gen 6. So they're getting in your Gen 6 starters with Chespin, Finnegan, Froakie. And there's even a France-exclusive Pokemon with Klefki. I mean, Klefki is definitely the most French Pokemon in existence, so it makes sense.
Yeah, just let me fucking fly to France in the middle of a COVID quarantine.
They won't
let you. That's great planning.
They won't let you.
But that's my fucking point.
Other news.
No, no.
The Game Awards.
No, I want to fucking stay here. We'll stay at this goddamn news.
The Game Awards.
Fucking motherfuckers took 4 fucking years to just make it so I can battle Joe, I'm goddamn using,
I'm,
Jim.
I'm not
from
saying
a,
Felix. A I'm saying Lo- Joe. Okay.
It was just as bad as Star Wars.
The Game Awards airing live 12/10, so December 10th, and they announced their category nominees. Now, I'm only going to go over the Game of the Year nominations, but the nominees this year, honestly, this year has been so long and it has felt like it's been like decades that I forgot some of these games came out this year. So the 6 nominees for Game of the Year for the Game Awards: Animal Crossing, New Horizons, Doom Eternal, Final Fantasy VII Remake, Ghost of Tsushima, Hades, and The Last of Us Part 2. And honestly, all of these games were amazing, honestly. Final Fantasy VII Remake, I thought, was fantastic. They did a wonderful job with it. Animal Crossing was super fun to play. Doom is just, I mean, Doom is Doom. They did a fantastic job.
Doom is one of the oldest games around now.
Oh, yeah.
Fuck.
But Hades is an indie game that made it to this list, and it's a roguelite. It's super...
Indies.
the art support style.
Your fucking indie games,
it's
man.
Wonderful. But honestly, I think out of everything that's on here, I think Ghost of Tsushima highest chance of winning.
Oh, it's such a beautiful game.
So
such a beautiful game.
That is your Game of the Year nominees. So make sure you watch that in December. And then my last one is, honestly, it completely, the article title itself is super accurate. Streamers baffled by new Twitch option to buy affiliate status. So affiliate, if you're unaware, on Twitch is you can monetize your stream. You can have people subscribe. You can have people donate, right. You know, gift you bits, gift subscriptions to other people. So you can monetize your stream. So, you know, you're streaming 40 hours a week, make a little bit of money off of it. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there is a new way. Instead of actually putting in the effort to do it and actively doing it, you can simply go to monstercat.com or whatever it is, Monster Cat Gold, and you can pay it for $5 a month, and they give you Twitch affiliate status included with that. So you can literally pay to monetize. And with that as well, like Monster Cat Gold, it's a music thing. So with all the DCMA strikes, and there's been a lot of issues with people streaming and using licensed music, and people have been getting banned and their videos deleted and stuff. It's a legitimate thing. You know, if you use the entire song of something and you don't have a license to play that song, sure, you're going to get in trouble for it. There's copyright protections there. I get it. But this gives you a library of songs that you can play during your stream. So it kind of gives you a license of stuff, and none of it's actual mainstream music. And it's, you go on and you get access to this music, but you can pay to get affiliate status. But Twitch has been getting.
Can we take this back a minute? Okay, so I can pay $5 to make money for free? I don't.
So the way it works is people have to enjoy your stream enough in order to give you money one way or another. So
right.
You can get bits, which every 100 bits is a dollar. So it's kind of like tipping you for doing a good job, or, you know, providing entertainment, right? I have subscribers on Twitch, and if you subscribe, you get access to exclusive emotes in chat. You get access to a badge while you're in the channel, and you get ad-free when you're watching me. So there's benefits to it, right? It's $5 for the base level, and Twitch pays out 50% of that to the streamer. Where bits, you get more, so it's a better payout on bits than subs. But if, say you're streaming and you don't stream enough to get affiliate status, but people are willing to subscribe to you for a month, right? $5 a month will give you that affiliate status, even if you don't put in the effort and the actual work to get it. So you can just buy into a monetized status.
I can't do it.
It's very weird. It's very weird.
I can't do this topic anymore. It's hurting my brain. Let's move on to GameCube.
It's so weird that they rolled out, like, you can pay to monetize.
No, sorry. I'm probably going to cut out the last bit of that conversation. Oh, that no. Was so boring.
That's fine.
I fall asleep listening to that shit. They're fucking assholes. All of them are asshats.
Asshats. All right, so GameCube is GameCube. Our console of the week.
We're on to the console of GameCube.
Oh, man. This I love the GameCube. One.
So fun, I almost forgot to include it a few weeks ago.
Dude, I loved it. So we'll great. You know, we have our favorite, but we'll talk about a number of them like we do every time we talk about consoles.
Right.
So some of the big notable games on the GameCube, you had the Resident Evil remake when they completely remade it. They upped the graphics. They made the game better while still, it doesn't lose its origins in the original PlayStation version. It did a fantastic job. You had games like Paper Mario, The Thousand Year Door.
Oh my god. The Mario alone, the Mario Tennis, the Mario Striker, the Mario Karts.
Oh man, look, so Paper Mario is probably my favorite Paper Mario game, The Thousand Year Door. And then Mario Kart Double Dash was so unique. It flipped the script. You know, you had a co-op kart racer.
Right.
I loved it. Loved it.
The you had a new chapter in Phantasy Star. You had the
Phantasy Star Online.
The exclusive for this, we talk about the exclusives for the PlayStation being so unique and cool. The exclusives for the GameCubes, the Nintendos, are just fun as shit with the first Luigi's Mansion.
Luigi's Mansion. You had Legend of Zelda, The Wind Waker, which still has to be some of my favorite Legend of Zelda music by far. And then you had Twilight Princess, which was dark and gritty and a much more mature take on the Zelda series, and it paid off so well.
Fire Emblem, new Fire Emblems, new Metal Gears, new Eternal Darkness, the like I said, Phantasy Star, it had a new chapter in it. You had the what do you want to call it, the best game maybe ever, Donkey Konga. Like,
no, dude.
Hello. It's
you're Kongas, forgetting about Pokemon Snap.
Okay? Like drums.
But
it's Donkey Kong.
So on a more serious note,
Donkey Konga.
You had games.
Because this is by far the best game for the system, obviously. I mean, sure, I can wrap it up in like 3 hours, but that's because I'm really good at the game. I play it all the time. Like, you see the things and then you hit the drums, and they're not just drums, they're congas. But it's funny because he's Donkey Kong.
Do I need to mute you? Do I need to mute you? Is this another Cobalt situation?
Are you?
So. But the GameCube, you had games like Tales of Symphonia, which eventually got remade and released on PC and on the PS3. Yeah. But that was such a one of my favorite open world like action RPGs that came out on the GameCube. You had games like Need for Speed Most Wanted, where while I played it on the Xbox 360, and the 360 version was better, I played it first on the GameCube, and it was so good. That is my favorite Need for Speed by far. And another one that we've talked about multiple times, but I played it first on GameCube, was Resident Evil 4. Easily.
That was still that was the
best Resident Evil.
The first time I had experience with it was you and me playing it on the GameCube. You know, we did like half the game through at your house, half the game through at my house. It was just a fantastic experience.
I still love it. Like, if I'm awake late at night and I can't sleep or something and there's nothing else I want to do, besides that, I play Resident Evil 4.
That's what I was going to say.
So
definitely. It had one of the funnest shooters, first-person shooters I've ever played. And that was the Time Splitters game. They had a few other Time Splitters, but then they had a separate one completely just for the GameCube. And they were fantastic games because you didn't just have the normal guns. You had guns that did weird fucking things.
Oh, yeah. This game was so strange.
I know. And you ran around like split in time or something. And it was
something like that.
No, it was a great game. I miss it.
There are a number of different games that we could continue to talk about that were great, that were on the GameCube.
The Tony Hawk games for it was pretty fucking fun.
And
but
we need to narrow it down. So Felix, I need to know what is your favorite?
Pokemon Snap.
Fuck yes, he's finally come around. He finally sees the light.
Super Smash Bros, man. Come
wait
on.
Wait a minute. This is deja vu, motherfucker.
Come on.
No.
Super Smash Bros started something, man. It started something to the extent where, like, we got to Super Smash Bros 2 and shit, and we were so ridiculously good at this game. Like, way better than any game we had ever been good at before. And, like, me and, you know, George, Carey, or whoever would be together in a room just having these endless tournaments and just creating we got so bored with the game that we were betting on the matches. And it didn't matter if you were playing.
You know, there's an entire eSport around this now, right?
Yeah. Man, so, this game, I mean, Smash, was hours of joy.
Smash Melee is still regarded by a large number of people as the best Smash Brothers game.
Yeah, it's so good. And I was happy that it got a handheld console. I'm happy that it's out on the Switch. I'm just happy for its existence. And people still get together yearly to just...
Oh, yeah. I mean, they still have Smash Melee, specifically Melee tournaments. And... You know, Smash Ultimate's the big one now, and they definitely, they got it right with Ultimate on the Switch.
Yeah.
For sure. But Smash Melee, there was something about that game, and just how well they made this massive arena battle royale, and some of these people who play this on the professional level are nuts, man. It is.
Oh, man. I wish I was still as good as I used to be, man, because we were all scary good back then, and now I suck ball sacks.
So,
what's your favorite? What's your favorite, man?
I had to give it to Super Mario Sunshine. And the thing is,
very cool.
I know it's not the best game. It is by far not the best GameCube game.
It doesn't and I'm aware have of to that, be.
But it's my favorite. It
just has to be fucking fun.
And on it, like, Sunshine, it captivated 13-year-old me immediately. You know, the variety,
just like Pokemon Snap did.
Just like Pokemon Snap did. And you know, I'm 13. You've got these new gadgets, these new movement styles, and the level design. Each world was uniquely different, and there's so many new challenges. And one of the things in the game back in that time, with no strategy guide or anything, getting all 120 shine sprites, which meant you had to get all 240, I think it was 240 blue coins, was near fucking impossible. But I did it more than once. And it's still a huge personal accomplishment of mine. And honestly, you know, we've talked about this before. Music for me is has such an important role in my video games. And
I'll tell you what, the fusion jazz that they did in Super Mario Sunshine
Sunshine has
amazing.
It, honestly, I think it still has some of the best songs in a Mario game. Now, don't get me wrong, Galaxy had some bangers. You know, the new Mario Odyssey.
Did you just describe a Mario track as bangers?
Yes, I did. You didn't let me finish because I was going to say
not let that go.
That Super Mario Odyssey had some bops. No, but
I hate you right now.
I did that just for you, by the way. I did that just for you. But no, Galaxy and Odyssey had some wonderful music, but Sunshine really just it takes the podium with it. It really did a fantastic job, and it was bright.
Is that another music joke? Podium? Takes the podium?
No, not really.
Another music joke?
Sure.
Like a conductor's podium?
It is now. It is now. Dad joke.
No. You know what? You know what I loved about GameCube was just when you, like, at a certain point, Mario has to just fucking fail, right? I mean, it's got to. How are you going to reinvent a fucking plumber's crack so many times? But they managed to.
Yeah.
They managed to keep doing it with each system. And that to me is just astonishing. Like from Sunshine, Paper Mario, Mario 64, Mario Odyssey, Mario Galaxy, Super Smash Brothers, you got Luigi's Mansion, Mario Kart, Mario Party. I mean, Mario fucking Tennis was so goddamn addicting, especially when you got the Wii, which we'll get into later. Like, they just keep making it good, and I don't know how they do it. I really don't, because Pokemon, they just keep practically repeating the same game.
So Pokemon, I will say, each year they add enough new stuff that makes it engaging, that makes it worth playing. But is it a different style of game? No. But with Mario, they've really taken each previous game.
I would have to disagree, because I don't buy every Pokemon game. Nowadays, I wait like four generations to buy the next Pokemon game.
Oh, jeez, dude, you're missing out on a lot.
I'm not. I don't think I am. Not like Mario. If I miss a Mario game, I am missing out a lot.
Also because Mario only comes out like every 4 or 5 years. So,
well, maybe they're resolved.
But with Mario, each new game, it has a brand new feel, a brand new element. You know, you go from Mario 64, which was the first like real 3D Mario. And, yeah, you know, you have this, you go into the paintings, the world, you had your triple jump, your long jumps. You had all this new movement. And then Mario Sunshine takes that new movement, but then adds a whole new level with Flood and it the jetpack and the rocket pack.
A splash of sunshine.
And all this new crazy movement that you can do, but on top of taking that new movement and creating levels specifically designed around it. Then you go on to Galaxy, where you have these little planets, and each one has its own gravity, and they completely developed around this new idea, where Pokemon is a turn-based RPG that you battle Pokemon and pick a move, and hopefully you get to go first.
Yeah, but in one game, you have these routes that you follow around a square sort of map shape, and then you go to the next game and you have these routes that you follow around a square little map shape.
What are you talking about?
How the games are different.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good job. Proud of you.
I know things.
So, and not just Miltank, that, you know,
Miltank was a Pokemon.
So I have to go back a little bit on The Legend of Zelda, The Wind Waker as well, because that was so close to being my favorite.
Oh, okay.
And that's another series where they take the same formula, but it evolves and they tell a new story and a better story, and they add new puzzles and new features. And that's just one of those games that every time they come out with a new one, it is fantastic.
I mean,
so Nintendo just
between they 64 and GameCube, the game you were able to put out was so drastically different that they could just make a really stellar, you know, Zelda game.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I am super excited. We're going to get, you know, Majora's Mask, you could argue and say, was a sequel to Ocarina of Time to an extent. It took place in the same world, but it didn't have anything to do with Ocarina of Time.
Yeah.
Whereas we are going to get a true sequel with Breath of the Wild 2, and I can't wait. So we did a thing earlier today.
No, yeah. We've talked to two people since we've met you guys last. Yeah,
we have.
And today specifically, we got an opportunity to talk to Ash Ketchum herself, Veronica Taylor.
Veronica Taylor, the original Ash Ketchum. Man, that was such a wonderful interview. That was so much fun. So much fun.
It was crazy.
It really was. And I honestly can't wait to air that one. It's not going to air until like the end of January, early February. But I can't wait to air it because it was so much fun. It was so silly. But last week, we also got to talk to the one and only Zap Brannigan, Professor Farnsworth, Philip J. Fry, Zoidberg, Billy
Ren
West.
And Stimpy.
Ren and Stimpy, yes. Billy West.
That
Billy
one was
West. Oh.
That was crazy, man.
That one, dude, both of these interviews that we did, and honestly, most of them, and unfortunately, you know, what you guys get to see live and what you guys get to listen to isn't even half of what we do and what we talk about during these interviews. And they're so fun, they're so silly, and there's so much depth to every single person we've talked to. They are so insightful, they're genuine people, and they're just a joy, an absolute joy to talk to.
Yeah. All right, let's run through this shit.
All right. So you can
don't forget
follow
to
us
check us
on
on Facebook, Instagram, SoundCloud, YouTube.
Okay, I'll take over. Twitch. YouTube, Twitch. You can follow us and subscribe and download our podcast anywhere that you can find podcasts, most notably Spotify, Amazon, Google,
Apple iTunes.
And Apple make sure
don't
you
don't forget to rate and review.
Rate and review, yes. If you don't want any of the extra fluff, you don't give a shit about two dads talking amongst themselves, head over to YouTube and you can catch just the interview series.
Just jump on, say something, like something, share, or whatever.
Share on Facebook, share on Twitter. Share,
yeah, you know, obviously share.